Well, hello, you're on the Wheeling broadcast with Keith and Johnny Orange. How are you doing today, John?
I'm good. How about yourself, Keith?
I am doing all right. So this is podcast number 2. And in full disclosure to our listeners, and that's one of the things that we're big on here is keeping everything honest and true with you guys. We're actually recording this right after recording number 1. We're going to be trying to do a couple of those at a time here and there when we can. But of course, to start out with, we want to get a couple of these uploaded so folks can start to get a flavor of what we're doing. So this is a recording date of 4/29/2019. This is the first day that we are recording episode 1 and 2 for the Mora, for the Wheelin' broadcast. But the Mora, as my slip of the tongue, that's kind of our topic today. You want to talk about the museum today, John?
I can a little bit, sure.
Yeah.
We are the Museum of Off-Road Adventure. I sit on the board for that, as well as a couple other people here today. We specialize in four-wheel drive and off-road vehicles.
And the history of them.
Yeah, and the history of a lot of the vehicles that we have there now are historic vehicles or of some historic significance in the four-wheel world. In particular, kind of our feature vehicle, the Napco, which we're going to be discussing more in a future episode.
Yeah, that is a cool truck.
Yeah, we've got, it's not just dedicated to Jeep or Toyota or anything like that. We've got a variety of different ones in there, including those, Jeep, Toyota. There's the two vehicles that we have in there that are from, it's Finland or the Netherlands.
We have a DAF from the Netherlands,
yes.
And then we've got the Munga from Germany, and we can talk about all that a little bit later. I want to back up for a minute. I don't want to put the cart before the proverbial horse here. Talking about the museum and how this museum got started, do you remember how we started this back in the day?
I remember I got a phone call, and we discussed the idea of it, and I was very excited at the prospect of actually starting something like this. And I know that just evolved from different conversations to the day we finally all met as a group.
Yeah, exactly. So originally, John and myself and Andrew and a number of people that are enthusiasts in the off-road world, a couple of things kind of happened simultaneously. We'd become aware of some off-road and four-wheel drive vehicles of rarity that were basically going to be lost to time via either being cut up for parts or sold off for scrap or whatever. And we also started kind of researching how many other four-wheel drive museums were out there. And we discovered through our research that there really isn't an all-encompassing one out there, is there, John?
None that I'm aware of.
Yeah, no. In interest of mentioning them in disclosure, there's some that kind of theme on the off-road aspect of things. You got the Rod Hall Motorsports Hall of Fame out west, and they focus more on the racing aspect of things. I have not been there yet. I do want to get out there. It looks like a very cool museum.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in Salt Lake City, you have the Toyota Land Cruiser Museum, which I think has got a couple hundred Land Cruisers. Have you ever seen that video online of them touring that place, John?
I don't think I have, but that's definitely something I'll look up a little later.
Oh, it's something else. They've got some unique models there. And then there's the four-wheel drive museum. Now, okay, you're going to say, well, wait a minute, there is a four-wheel drive museum, but they're up in Wisconsin, I believe. Maybe Minnesota. I think it's Wisconsin. We'll touch on them probably in a future episode, but they basically focus on the FWD trucks that were made up there, and those were industrial truck. They did a lot of snowplow vehicles and things like that. They are getting into some other four-wheel drive vehicles like we are, but we wanted to do something a little different. We wanted to talk about how these off-highway vehicles developed and how they're continuing to develop today. What a lot of people don't know is, off-road vehicles have been developed essentially concurrently with regular two-wheel drive vehicles and passenger cars. The history goes way back to really the turn of the century, 1901 to 1903, with some of the early experiments of Spyker and Lanner Porsche over in Europe. And we're going to touch on those in the future. But four-wheel drive has been around, and off-road vehicles have been around since the beginning of the car itself. And so that's, we wanted to just kind of tell that story because a lot of it's forgotten history and some of it hasn't really ever been covered before. Andrew and myself, when we started, you know, talking about doing this, we wanted to see if, you know, maybe another museum would be interested if we put together a traveling collection or something in featuring this. And we actually did talk to a few museums and they said, well, we're really not interested in that. We're into the brass era cars, or we're into the Porsches, or we're into the, you know, the old Duesenbergs and things like that. You know, by all means, we're not putting down other museums. We love what they do. Absolutely love what they do. We've toured many of them across the country.
Anyone that preserves history's got a good thing going.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's just that focus has, these vehicles have been kind of looked down upon over the years because they, you know, one, they don't have a big collector value.
Yeah.
Two, surviving examples of some of the earlier vehicles are extremely rare. And the reason for that is, you know, these vehicles were built as work vehicles in the beginning. Mm. You know, now everybody's got a SUV or a, you know, 4x4 truck in their driveway. In fact, majority of American households do now have an all-wheel drive or a four-wheel drive vehicle. But, you know, the early days, the stuff that we're trying to preserve right now, you know, that stuff was used until it was gone. It was rusted in half.
Yep.
So even very common models. I know you yourself, you've got a Willys Jeepster that we display at the museum.
Yep.
And, you know, they made, if I remember right, what, about 60,000 of those or something like that, was it?
I want to say, I know it ran from 67 to, I believe, 71 or 73.
Okay.
And towards the end, yeah, just there were so many other options available at the time. Like you said, options change and demand for others rises. And that was the end of that.
But they made tens of thousands of them.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a vehicle that you almost never see.
Yeah, I knew nothing about them. That was my grandfather's old Jeep. And I knew nothing about it other than it was the old Jeep in the barn. And I started doing research on that. And, yeah, it's very uncommon to find those.
And I would like to do an episode in the future that covers the Jeepster history. I think that's a very rich history, and it's pretty interesting because, as you know, it's a two-part history, two different generations of the Jeepster in the 40s and then when they brought it back again in the 60s. But like I said, that's for another broadcast. So like we're saying, we had discovered at this point that other museums, because we're kind of telling a story today, other museums were not really interested in displaying these vehicles. And so we said, well, wait a minute. If they're not, then there needs to be a place for this. There needs to be a museum that teaches about this history. And this is really where the Mora was born. So I don't remember off the top of my head the initial date, but I do remember that a big group of us, about 10 of us or so, we met at Foxfire Fixin's restaurant here in Marine City.
Yep.
And we sat around and we talked. And we even talked about different names and whatnot for the museum. And, you know, we eventually came up with the Museum of Off-Road Adventure, M-O-R-A. Not really sure why that one stuck. I like it.
It has a nice ring to it.
It does. The Mora. I like calling, you know, I always call it the Mora. I just have to explain it to people who've never heard before what it stands for, what the acronym stands
for. We'll make it common eventually.
Everyone absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, myself and, other folks here that are involved, this was really a group effort. We started to research, museums in general, not just automotive museums, but all sorts of museums, art museums, and all sorts of cultural museums. And we wanted to set this thing up for success. We didn't want it to fail, as unfortunately many do.
Yeah.
And one of the first things, of course, we figured out, as you know, is that we had to be a 501c3 nonprofit.
Yep.
Private museums do work. There's a number of them around the country, but over 95% of auto museums in the world, or at least in North America, are nonprofit museums, and they have a board. So in Michigan, where we're located, we're in St. Clair County, Michigan, the law is that you need to have three people to start a nonprofit. You just need a treasurer and a president and a vice president. So that seemed like, okay, pretty easy. We can do that, three people. But then the question became, as you remember, because you and I had a lot of conversations about this.
Oh, yeah. Many late nights.
Many, many conversations as to whether that was the ideal thing for a museum. And we discovered that auto museums and other museums and nonprofits even that have nothing to do with the museum industry seem to be statistically most successful if they have between 7 and, say, 13 people on their board.
Yeah.
Too small of a board, say a closely family-held board, which is pretty common. You'll have a group or a family that decides to start a nonprofit, and you might have, you know, mom and dad are the president and vice president, and Aunt Sue or whoever is the treasurer. And, you know, you get familial conflict in there, and the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah.
And so we needed enough people that we could keep this thing alive, where if we had people that fell off or whatever, that we could keep this thing going. And so that's why we shot for that idea of 9 board members, which that's actually what we originally had, was it not? 9 board members?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, we did have one board member that unfortunately had some things going on in life, and he had to step down. So we're now down to 8. And the 8 of us really work together pretty...
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good. I mean, we all bring different ideas.
Yeah, that's the best thing. We can have a dialogue amongst everybody. Everybody has overall their different opinions on things, but a common interest. So we can, if there's an issue or a problem, we can sit down, we can discuss it, we can figure it out. And there are plenty of times we don't all agree on everything, but we always come to the best conclusion and get done what's best for the museum.
Well, exactly. You know, that was the idea of being able to do that. And so when we did this and we set this thing up, we originally were meeting monthly, and now we meet bi-monthly, which seems to work out pretty well. And or is that the right term, bi-monthly? Every other month?
I believe that's the right word, yeah.
Yeah, bi-monthly.
Yeah.
Bi-monthly isn't twice a month. Okay, just wanted to make sure. So we're meeting bi-monthly. And, you know, we've got a board with a president, a treasurer, we have a sergeant of arms, we've got our vice president. What's, I think, interesting and kind of inherent to our success here, at least in the beginning, is even though we are like-minded, as in we are enthusiasts here, we're not all deep 4x4 enthusiasts.
Yeah.
Our president... who also happens to be our producer of this radio show, Mr. Wagner, is, he's had some four-wheel drive vehicles, but he's not really an off-roader, but he has a lot of experience with other museums in the past, maybe we can get him to talk on air one of these days about that. And our vice president, Stephanie, she is... you know, an enthusiast. She goes out in the off-road and does a lot of wheeling and things like that out in the woods. And then we have a number of other people, and only about half the people on our board are, I guess, what you'd call off-road enthusiasts. The other half are people that are interested in bringing this type of art and culture to our area.
Part of the lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, of course, you know, you and myself and Andrew have dragged a few of them into the off-road world now.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, we've had getting them out on the four-wheelers and the go-karts and things like that. So.
Is it called Stockholm Syndrome, where you drag them in and make them like it?
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's what we need to do here. So, that's working out pretty well. So we'd formed this board. So we had that put together. And... the next step, of course, was where are we going to be? You know, museums exist under a roof somewhere. We needed to have a place where we could, you know, build this collection and we could do something.
Display it.
Exactly. So, you know, auto museums in particular start two different ways, what we figured out. Typically, a private collection, somebody that's a millionaire or whatever, maybe has 100 cars or whatever, or 50 cars of interest, will eventually roll that over into a museum. The other way, which is kind of the long road and the hard way, and what we're doing, is you start with the idea of a theme and as a museum, and, you know, like we did, we started with one vehicle and we built upon that. And that's what we're going to continue to do. We're going to continue to build what we have, but we still needed a building. And I guess we really still do. We don't have a permanent home yet.
It works for now.
It does. It works for now. So ABC Home and Commercial Services, who owns a old World War II Quonset hut, it's a surplus Quonset hut, big, long building. I think the total building is about 8,000 square feet. Is that what it is, John? Something like that?
I could easily see it. It's a dome shape, kind of. So yeah. It's hard to guess off the top of my head.
Yeah, and it's long
very
building.
Very long.
They have this building, and they had a space in the back that wasn't being used. And so the owners there said, hey, if you want to do this, you guys can use this space here. And so they're not charging us anything for that. And that got us springboarded off. We had to go in and clean it out, and we had to fix it up a little bit, and gave us space where we can do a rotating collection of, you know, anywhere from maybe a dozen to maybe 16 vehicles, and then other displays and whatnot, depending on how we lay things out. So, you know, so they did this. They donated this building to us, and we got it started. So I think that this is probably a good point. We're going to go to break for a minute, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how we opened the doors.
Sounds good.
We'll talk to you in a few.
Talk to you in a bit.
Have you heard the good news? Now there's a local paper that people just can't seem to get enough of. It's the Thumbprint News. The Thumbprint News is free and full of interesting stories that focus on what's important in our lives. Stories that touch on this area's rich history, unique places, and the diverse cultures and people. You'll be in the know when you read the Thumbprint News. Go to thumbprintnews.com and read the paper online for free today.
Well, welcome back. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about how the museum got started and how we formed a board and how we got a building. I'm Keith. Again, and I'm over here with Johnny Orange.
Hello again. And just to confirm, we did discuss about our meetings being bi-monthly. Just to confirm we're using the right words, our producer Andrew looked it up just to make sure everything was correct. Turns out bi-monthly can mean either twice a month or once every other month. So we are using the latter definition of it, once every other month.
I was an English major in college, and I still didn't remember that. So thank God for Google.
Absolutely.
These are the things these days you just have to figure out.
Oh, yeah.
So before the break, of course, we were talking about how we got the building, and we started out. And before we even start really getting into the collections, which some of the collections are going to be separate episodes in and of themselves, you know, the next thing that we needed to figure out, you know, of course, we had a building, and I guess it's easy enough to say that we had a little bit of a collection already, both things that I owned personally through Thin Line Off-Road, and as the word got out there, we had a few people that wanted to display their vehicles on long-term loans, which is pretty common for museums, of course. So we immediately were able to put together a collection of about a half a dozen vehicles. The museum did not own any vehicles yet, but very soon on we did, and we're going to talk about that in our next episode, I believe, actually our first vehicle acquisition. But anyways, so we had this building now. We had this space. We had a board formed, 501c3. Of course, the next thing is funding. You know, where do you get the money to do something like this? You know, my business couldn't just keep funneling money into it. I didn't even have that much money to do so. And so we had to look at fundraising opportunities. And we've developed a few of those, and we're continuously developing those. Right off the bat, we had a few. What was our first fundraiser, John?
I believe the very first one was a dinner that was done at Foxfire Fixins.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, yeah, yep. That was, wasn't it?
That was the very first one, and I believe the second one was the ice cream social that we did during the mile. Was it the mile-long garage sale trail, they call it?
The Bridge to Bay garage sale trail.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. We did that at Foxfire as well. And I guess, you know, we've mentioned Foxfire a couple of times during the podcast here. The folks that own the Kwanzaa Hut building that are donating the space to us also own Foxfire Fixins. So big community type thing here. And once again, in full disclosure, because, you know, we like to do that and keep everything out there. That's actually my parents, Al and Diane Codette. I'm Keith Codette. I worked for them up until about 2009, but I split off, did my own thing since then. But they've been big supporters of us, and they're big into the community around here, and they have a multitude of different businesses and whatnot. So, but anyways, Foxfire, even though my family owns the place, it's one of my favorite places to eat. You know,
Very good food.
Yeah, the ribs and everything down
Fantastic.
There. So yeah, we had that big dinner, and they donated... I think it was like 20% of all the sales that night.
Yep.
Yeah. And so that got us a few hundred dollars to start out here.
Good little jump start.
And then the ice cream social, same thing, kind of a... the ice cream social was pretty cool, though. You remember what we did for that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I ruined one of the first batches by not reading the bag I grabbed the sugar from. So instead of putting sugar into the ice cream mix, I put salt.
Oh, I forgot completely about that. I forgot.
Oh, I didn't.
Oh, jeez. Well, what we were using, though, we had loaned to us a 1920 Fairbanks Morse hit-and-miss engine, and we were powering an old belt-driven ice cream maker with it. So we were doing this outside for
three
hot, sweaty days out
there.
It was a lot of fun, but... So those were a couple of good ways to get a few hundred dollars to start off.
And good ice cream.
Yeah, we had some good ice cream. Of course, we at these different events, we had a donation bucket out where we had, you know, private donors. And then pretty soon, right off the bat, we developed the Trail Leader Club.
Mm.
And John, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Trail Leader Club?
Yep. So the Trail Leader Club, I believe we set that up for the first 100 memberships.
Correct.
So the first 100 members will be part of the Trail Leader Club, which is the initial first lifetime memberships that we sell to be part of the Mora.
Absolutely. And those lifetime memberships to the Mora are going to have a few special perks. We're going to have events in the future that will be for Trail Leader Club members only. Eventually, potentially discounts at gift shop once we have one operational.
Get a really cool, I believe it's stainless steel engraved card. It's got your name, the member number, who we are, our logo, and all that on it.
Yeah, they're very cool. They're laser engraved cards that they do. It's a wallet card. And it's got your number on there, like you said, your name and everything. Mm. What was the cost on those?
I believe it was $200.
Yeah, I believe you're right, $200.
Yeah. And that is subject to change.
Absolutely. We've had a number of those. I think we've already sold 13 or 14 of those.
Yeah, so there's only a few left.
Well, yeah.
First 100.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got about 80-something left, but we sell those every once in a while.
Yep.
And those are some of the early supporters of the museum. And it's not just all local people, which is interesting. In fact, I think the first three lifetime memberships that we sold were people that lived out of state. So people believe in what we're doing.
Oh, yeah.
And we're pretty happy to see that. So that was another way of bringing money in. And then, of course, like many car museums, we decided we needed to sponsor a show, or at least hold a show.
Mm.
And that's where our first big you really can't call it a truck show. It was a off-road vehicle show. Mm-hmm. Came from, and so tell us about that, John.
Well, we did that. It was the second week of October 2018. We had, was it 30 vehicles?
I think we had, that was about the turnout. The weather was terrible.
I'm trying to remember a lot of the specs from that. I know I was unfortunately out of town for that, but yeah, I saw a lot of the pictures and everything afterwards.
Right?
Yeah, my buddy's brother got married up in Traverse City that weekend.
Gotcha.
So that, that was interesting.
The weather was a little drizzly all morning. It was October 13th, but we had about 30 vehicles show up. We had some beautiful plaques that were done up by a local imprinting place, and it was a lot of fun. We were out there 4 or 5 hours. Mm-hmm. We call it Wheels in the Woods, and the Wheels in the Woods event, there's a wooded area that is about 2 miles from the museum where we were able to put all the vehicles, and we could have had a lot more, and we're hoping to have a lot more for next year here. There was a very nominal entry fee. Off the top of my head, I think it was like $20 or $25. We had not only four-wheel drive vehicles, but we also had ATVs and sand rails and motorcycles were welcome. We didn't have any show up that first year.
But, yeah.
We did have, I think, 4 ATVs show up. My favorite thing, well, there was actually several favorites, but we had Humvees there. We had custom diesel trucks, all different types of categories.
The restored truck by Jim Moss, the old Jeep truck.
Oh, yeah, and he won Best of Show, did
he
not?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Yeah, what is that, like a 51, 52 Willys pickup, something like that?
Don't remember off the top of my head. I know it's an older vehicle, and I know it took him a couple years, but he did a full frame-up restoration on that vehicle.
It was gorgeous.
Oh, absolutely beautiful. I've seen pictures of that vehicle through its different stages of restoration, and from start to finish, wow, just night and day, absolutely beautiful what he did with that vehicle.
That thing was really cool.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully he comes back this year with it.
And then we had a guy show up with the number 12 Dodge Power Wagon that ever rolled off the line. Now, that's not to be confused with the wartime Dodge trucks that the Power Wagon was built based off of. Power Wagon came out right after the war, of course, but this was the serial number 12, and that was really cool to see that. Mm. So we had that show up as well. And we're going to do Wheels in the Woods again here. It's going to be September 28th this year, though, Saturday. So a little earlier, Saturday, September 28th, 2019.
Should have a little better weather this time, I think.
Well, you never know. Hoping.
Yeah, it's Michigan. It might snow. It might be sunny. We'll find out when we get there.
It could snow, be sunny, and have a tornado the same day. I mean, you know.
I've been there. It's happened. I've seen it.
It's Michigan weather for
absolutely.
You. Absolutely. Know? We could be putting on sun lotion 1 minute and a snowsuit the next. So
I've done it.
But we're hoping if you're listening and you're interested in coming out, pretty much any sort of off-road vehicle, dirt bikes, your quads, your side-by-sides, vintage 4x4s, new 4x4s, diesel, six-wheel drive trucks, military vehicles, first responding vehicles.
Even full custom stuff.
Full custom stuff doesn't have to be all original.
It's got four wheels, bring it out.
Absolutely. It's not a show for your Corvette or your Camaro, unless maybe it's sitting up on a Blazer frame or something.
Hmm.
You know? We're not going to say that you're not welcome to come. By all means, you're welcome to come, but
the
categories are for the off-road vehicles. It is an off-road vehicle show. It's not a wheeling event. It is a typical like car show. So you'll want to, it's a park and let people see it. And last year we did some trivia, had a lot of fun.
Yeah, got some music playing the whole time.
Yeah,
we had refreshments and a little bit of food.
Yeah, Foxfire brought down the their pulled pork sandwiches. So
those are very good, by the way.
Enjoyed that a lot. So, yeah, that was our next big fundraiser, and we're going to have another one as well this year. And, of course, we have a donation bucket there at the museum. So I think probably the next natural point for us to talk about here, and that was, by the way, that car show, the Wheels in the Woods show, that was before the museum was open to the public. The ice cream social and the dinner were all before the museum was open to the public.
Hey, we did a little car show with the dinner, if I remember correctly, didn't we?
It wasn't so much a show. I mean, it was. We had a couple plaques available.
Yeah. Yep.
And we had Foxfire's Choice, the Mora's Choice, and Thin Line Off-Road.
It's a little kind of soft show, so to speak.
Yeah, it was a start. So that was kind of our technically our first show, I think, really, wasn't it?
I think so. I was just thinking about that while we were talking about it.
We had a few vehicles show up for that, which was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Some very cool built vehicles on that one.
Absolutely. And so all this was to get a few dollars. Fortunately, with our building being donated to us, and not having really a lot of overhead to start out with, we still had a couple of expenses. One of the first expenses that we had for the museum was we needed some sort of partition wall between the half of the building that we're using and the half of the building that ABC is using. So we built that to look like an old gas station front.
That was done with old pallets, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the other inspirations from Pinterest.
Yeah, it was a Pinterest type of thing. Yeah, absolutely. We used some pallets, so we used that for some siding. We did frame it with actual lumber and all that, of course. But then we used pallets for the siding. It looks does look like an old vintage gas station.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
So
it's got a Greyhound bus sign, I believe, up on the top there.
Yep, and it has the Greyhound bus sign that's originally from Rain City, Michigan, that hung up till the 60s, hanging there. So, and there's an old gas pump and things like that. It's a neat picture opportunity. People like to take pictures in front of it and whatnot. So, so we did have a few expenses, and then of course we had legal expenses getting on. People don't realize this with a 501c3, but it's difficult to set it up correctly without the use of a lawyer. Now, I'm not saying you can't do it. People do it all the time. But we wanted our bylaws to be set up for the continued success of this thing for a long time. So we agreed as a board to hire an accountant and a CPA to work together to do this. And that was costly. I think our total bill was almost $1,500 between the two of them, which is where the majority of our money from those events went.
And just so the people know, Keith, too, what does it mean that we have a 501c3? What does that allow us to do that not everybody can?
So being a 501c3 nonprofit organization, of course, we're nonprofit. We don't give money to, say, shareholders or anything like that. All money that comes into the organization goes back to the organization for the growth of the organization. And if we get a donation to the organization, whether it is the form of a physical donation, such as, you know, somebody wants to give us a vehicle or somebody wants to write us a check, that's all tax deductible. They can write that off because we're a public charity is what we are. So being that it's an entity of itself, it's its own corporation, but it exists for the embetterment of itself and for the embetterment of the public. So that's what we are. There's other things, of course. There's a lot of laws and regulations that go around being a 501c3, but we are a nonprofit charity, and we're built to do that. So there was a lot of cost, like we said, up front doing this, and that's where most of those monies went. And so we got the wall built that we needed to build, and we got all that done, and we needed to be ready for our opening date. And we're going to take a little bit of a break now. And
say before we get to there, yeah, let's take a break for a bit and go from there.
Absolutely. We'll talk about our opening day.
Yeah.
Ah, spring. It means so many things. Birds, flowers, warmer temperatures, and oh, let's not forget, bugs! Don't let pesky bugs take over your home. Call ABC Home and Commercial Services. They have the solution for your spiders, wasps, box elder bugs, Asian lady beetles, cluster flies, and more. ABC Home and Commercial Services, the best in pests. Call 810-794-5678.
Welcome back. This is Wheelin' with Johnny Orange and Mr. Keith over here.
So before the break, we were talking about how we got ready to be open. And you know, of course, there was a lot of other little things that it took to get open. But, you know, you could probably talk for hours on a lot of that stuff. So not to bore people on the minute details of it, but basically we needed to be open. We didn't know exactly when. And just from my personal memory of this thing, we probably would have been pretty good opening up in maybe February of 2019. We were, you know, on track for being about there. But there was something that came along, which we knew about anyways, that kind of pushed us ahead a little bit. And that's the Christmas Walk. Have you been through the Christmas Walk, John?
I have not yet, actually. I've not had the opportunity to go through that yet. This year, for sure, though.
All right. 2019
is my year.
You're going to have to do it.
Yeah.
There's a local event here that is also run by the owners of ABC and Foxfire. And it's called the History of the Christmas Tree Walk. And they've got over 250 Christmas trees put up in this big log home, and people tour through it, and they're all different theme trees, and they spend a couple hours doing this, and it's just a fantastic community event. They've been doing it for, I think they're going on 15 years now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I never realized it was that long.
Yeah, it's been a while. And so anyways, the front of the building that is our museum is, in the month of December, their kind of bus area. There's not enough parking at the home where the Christmas Walk is held, and they get between 80 and 200 something visitors a night.
Oh, wow.
And so they need to bus people down there, and it's about 3 miles away, so 2 or 3 miles away. And so we needed, or they needed, a spot to do that, and they've been doing that from the building that we're at in the very front. Well, we knew, of course, that throughout the month of December, we would be looking at potentially 2,000 to 3,000 people that were going to go through the Christmas Walk. And so we really pushed. You helped a lot.
The initial setups, moving stuff in.
Yeah.
Rearranging.
Andrew did. We had some volunteers down there.
Justin.
Yeah.
My buddy Jason came out for a day, gave us a hand.
Absolutely. We had a lot of people helping with different things. Our producer, Andrew, is telling us right now that this is the 16th year of the History of the Christmas Tree Walk. He's over there at his computer looking stuff up and
making
us
look
us.
Bad.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's all right. We'd rather get the information correct than look bad.
So. Absolutely, absolutely. So for the 16th Christmas Walk that's coming up, so for the
wouldn't that be the 17th coming up? Or this is the
16th? This is the 16th coming up. So last year was the 15th.
Cool.
So they opened up December 1st, and we wanted to be open and available. Now, we didn't charge people to go through the museum. We did it free of charge. It was kind of a preview type of thing.
A little soft opening.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a soft opening, and we put through a lot of people during the Christmas Walk. Of the 2,000 or 3,000 people that went through, I don't know the exact number. I think they were around 2,600 or something this year. I don't know the exact number, but of the number of people that they put through the Christmas Walk, I'd say that probably about half of them went back and walked through the museum and kind of took a look, and then maybe half of those people really engaged. They read the signs. They talked to the people that were volunteering in the museum, and so it was just great exposure.
Yeah.
To get out there, and so that's why we jump started there, and we also had, and we're going to talk about in the next episode, Hemmings Motor News picked up the story of us opening the museum as well about the same time. So we had a lot of great press. It just was something. It was a lot of people just enjoyed this, and it was a lot of fun. And of course, the social media started to blow up. Next thing you know, we're open. So after the Christmas Walk, of course, it slows down because we don't have people getting bussed in there every evening. But we do. We are open now. And what are our hours down there, John?
10 to 3 on Sundays.
10 to 3 every Sunday.
Yeah, it's AM to PM.
Yep, absolutely. I mean,
we could probably do PM to AM if we had enough interest.
Well, you know. and, of course, we also do special groups and tours. We've had people contact us from different off-road clubs and things like that.
Group hosted their, was it their monthly meeting there, off-road club?
They did. That was one of the off-road clubs from kind of the west side of the state or the center of the state that came over. And we've had, you know, different groups that have done things like that. So, you know, we're open by appointment or 10 to 3 on Sundays, and hopefully in the future we'll be open more days than that. But right now we're all volunteer-based. We don't have a full-time paid staff. We'd like to get to that point. We do have a donate button at the Mora website. So if you feel like making that big donation, you know, $10,000, $10 million, you know, we would be very happy about that. You can go to themora.org and you can make a donation there.
And that's one of those things. Every little bit helps. And that's, I don't know if anybody's familiar with Amazon Smile.
Yeah.
I believe you go to smile.amazon.com. And they donate a small percentage of every sale with that to the organization of your choice. And we are registered with them.
And how do they find us on Amazon Smile?
I've only used it a few times myself so far, but it's smile.amazon.com. And it asks you to set up who you would like to donate that little bit to. So you would go there and you'd search for the Museum of Off-Road Adventure.
Correct.
And that would allow you to make that. Does anyone know the percentage offhand?
0.5.
So it's half a percent of whatever your total sale is through Amazon would go to us.
And it doesn't cost the people anything either.
No, it doesn't cost you anything.
So I go on there and I buy. Let's say I go buy a new $100 printer. For my office. I don't even know how much a printer is anymore. They're probably more than that. But
I have no idea.
I buy a new $100 printer. We're going to get 50 cents, right?
I was never good at math in school, but I think that works out correct.
Yeah, so we're going to get 50 cents. Now, I know that doesn't seem like a lot, but it adds up.
Oh, yeah.
I know people that do all of their shopping pretty much on Amazon.
You do a lot of your Christmas shopping. That number adds up pretty quick. I shop for things for work there. So every purchase that is made there, that it's done through smile.amazon.com, set up for us, and that every little bit helps with that, absolutely.
Yeah, very cool. And there's going to be other ones in the future. I know that like Five Below, which is getting to be a pretty popular store, does a very similar type of thing. We're going to set up with more organizations like that.
And
any business like that that donates back to these nonprofits, whether it's ours or other ones, it's greatly appreciated.
Oh, yeah.
We just want to let you know, Amazon, I know you're a big company, but it's great. We really appreciate what you're doing.
It's not just us. Everybody needs a little bit, and every little bit helps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we are open now. We are open to the public. We've got the website up. You know, we're building this thing on a shoestring budget, but, you know, we're optimistic. Our board's optimistic. Our supporters are optimistic. John, what are some of the immediate goals that you want to see with the museum? Like, let's say the next year. What do you want to see? What kind of growth? What kind of changes do you want to see in the museum the next year?
That's a good question, Keith. I mean, a couple new vehicles. We've got a lot of cool stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, any growth is good with that. New vehicles. I know we have a few engine display models. Anything that shows or, you know, maybe interactive displays. I know we had discussed previously about making some interactive displays, things kids can play with to see how things work. You know, I've always loved the study of, you know, what makes it work and how it works. So maybe we set something up that we could show how four-wheel drive works.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned kids. We are a very kid-friendly museum.
Oh, yeah.
You know, unlike a lot of car museums where everything is behind ropes, kids can walk up to a lot of these vehicles. Now, we do have a few displays behind ropes.
Yeah.
Things that are irreplaceable or
extremely rare.
But a number of our vehicles, kids can get in with the help of one of our museum staff. And they can get their pictures. They can sit in the vehicles. You know, they can touch things. They can kind of feel what it feels like to be in a rock crawler. They can see what it feels like to be in a Humvee. You know, an old fire truck. Things like that. So there is a lot of things for kids to do. You know, John, what would you say? Most visitors there that come in, especially with kids, probably spend, what, maybe 45 minutes to an hour at the museum?
I'd say somewhere around there. I was only working there the one day. I didn't have any kids come in.
Okay.
But there were a couple groups, one couple that came in, and they probably spent about a half hour, 40 minutes in there just looking at the different things. You know, we have a lot of pictures of the one truck in particular that people can flip through, so a lot of questions about that and a lot of interest on it. But there's a lot of cool different things in there. I mentioned earlier in this episode, I believe, just about the variety. There's no one specific manufacturer vehicles that overshadows any of them. You know, they all have a unique aspect in the four-wheel drive world.
Yeah, absolutely. The history is very rich in this. And you know, there are other themed museums out there, you know, but a lot of times, like you said, it's based off like a make or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might have a museum of all Duesenbergs or a museum of all Porsches or Packards or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And that's fine. Corvette Museum, you know, the one that has the big sinkhole in the middle of it now. You know, you remember that probably hearing about that. So there's... you know, but our theme is these off-road vehicles. Mm. And so we even have rotating displays of, say, early four-wheelers at different times. And you mentioned our cutaway engines our engines. We have a Detroit diesel cutaway engine that was donated to us. And we also have a 8.1-liter Chevrolet big block V8 that was donated to us that's from the auto show.
Mm-hmm.
It's all decorated up all pretty, and, it, you know, kids can touch it. They can see, okay, you know, they can ask questions. Okay, what does this do? What does this do?
And see the inner workings of a lot of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, John, like, what are you visioning for the future now with the museum? You know, 5-10 years, where do you want to see this be?
I'd like to take over the old Cobo Hall. You know, expand to the full capacity of the building.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, get to the point. Like Jurassic Park, you have to get in a vehicle to get toured around the whole thing.
Sure.
I think that'd be very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, and John's joking, but kind of not at the same time. We do need more space, you know.
Expansion, getting bigger, have more to show people is always,
absolutely,
you know, the end goal.
You know, just kind of dreaming here, I would love to see a display in the future where it's kind of like an indoor mountain with some vehicles on it
Absolutely. We had one vehicle we displayed on a boulder.
Yeah, absolutely.
They'll show the articulation of a four-wheel drive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd like to see more things like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the future, we'd like to see more, you know, basically maybe halls themed. So you could have, like, say, a military vehicle hall. You could have...
Oh, if we do that, we got to get a machine gun.
Well, you know, there you go. You can mount it to one of them, right?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I don't know if we can let you play with it, though.
Oh, come on.
You know, different theme. We could have, you know, first responding vehicles. We could have whole thing on Jeeps and Willys because they're a huge part of off-road history, of course.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to see all that. So we've got a lot of great things coming for this museum, folks. You know, you can tell us what you'd like. Go to our Facebook page. Go to our website. You know, if there's something that you really want to see, or better yet, if you've got something sitting in your barn or your garage that maybe belonged to grandpa that you don't know what to do with, you know, you've got that old truck or that old Willys or that whatever that you've got, and you're looking for a home for it, we are interested always in taking donations of vehicles and displays, signage, anything really. We're even collecting books and magazines that have to do with this stuff. So if you've got those types of things, we always take donations, or we take things on loan. So if you've got something that you say, hey, we just still want to own this, but we need a place to put it for the next 5 years, we'd like to talk to you.
So
reach out through either Facebook or the website at themora.org. And with that said, you know, that's pretty much this program. We're getting an idea of what the Mora looks like.
Absolutely.
And we're going to start moving into what the podcast, more specifically some of our themes that we want to talk about. So... John, what are our websites and Facebooks again?
We are on Facebook at Museum of Off-Road Adventure and Wheelin' Radio. We're at just Wheelin' on Facebook. Wheelin'Radio.com is for this podcast, and then themora.org is the website for the museum.
And we're also on Instagram at The Museum of Off-Road Adventure with underscores between all of the words. And you can also always check out Thinline Off-Road at thinlineoffroad.com. And we did talk a little bit about the Christmas walk today, folks, and I believe the website for that is thechristmaswalk.com. So if you want to check that out and see what that's all about, if you're going to visit the museum this December, I think our producer Andrew is actually looking right now to see if that's correct. Maybe he's not. Okay. I believe it's thechristmaswalk.com. If I'm incorrect, we'll correct that in a future episode. But that's about it, folks. This was podcast number two.
Yeah, don't forget, if there's anything specific you'd like to hear about, feel free to shoot us a message on Facebook. And links will be in the description for any contact or if you'd like more information.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and have a good one.